It's not often we get the chance to interview Hollywood celebs on ETR Radio, which is why this episode is particularly special. Once a lacrosse playing English major, actor Matthew Del Negro experienced something of a renaissance before graduating from college. That unexpected transformation, a complete 180 as he puts it, was what ultimately led to his current career in film and TV acting. Jeff Steen here, editor of Early to Rise, at the mic again this episode, and it's definitely a unique one for a lot of reasons. But what makes my interview with Matt exceptional is the level of vulnerability that he's willing to share. There were countless struggles, hang-ups, obstacles that Matt faced when he started on his transformative personal and professional journey many years ago, including more than his fair share of ego-crushing rejection. But he's found a way to harness the good, maintain a positive outlook, and commit to ongoing self-improvement in an acting world that is, by nature, often erratic, sometimes brutal, and full of uncertainties. More on all that in just a second. We're going to get to all those stories. First, though, I want to remind you that ETR Radio is brought to you by The Perfect Day Formula. You can grab your free copy of this blueprint to success and living the life of your dreams at freeperfectdaybook.com. It's actually a great companion to this interview with Matt and really touches on some of the principles of high achievement that Craig Ballantyne champions every single day. It's the motivational foundation that will give you actionable advice on finding clarity, purpose, and poise in the chaos of everyday life. All right, now let's get to that interview with actor, podcast host, and all-around inspiration, Matt Del Negro.
But let's start with a little background, because, I mean, for those who may not be super familiar with you, you've been in the acting space now for how long? How long has it been?
Well, I officially moved to New York City after college. So let me just take it back. I grew up in Westchester County, New York. I went to Boston College. I played lacrosse at BC. We were Division I back then. I played freshman year, played sophomore year. I went to Italy to study between sophomore and junior year. The reason I did that was so I wouldn't go abroad the spring of junior year, as most people do, so I wouldn't miss the season. And then ironically, that trip ended up prompting me to kind of do a whole 180 and question playing lacrosse anymore and wondering if I want to do something else with my life, and started writing in a journal. Went back junior year, played fall ball, and at the end of fall ball realized I really don't want to play. Went in, told coach I was done, and then that spring I went out for a play out of nowhere. People thought I was crazy. I didn't get it. And then a month later, I went out for another one and I got a lead role, but it was a tiny production. Wasn't even on a stage. It was in a lecture hall at BC. But I did it and I loved it. And I just said, and it was only a 2-night performance. And I just said, I'm going to be an actor. So from there, I was an English major already. I started taking film classes, got a film studies minor. Graduated BC spring of 94, moved home that summer, was working with the Mason, laying patios that summer, making some money. Went out for a musical in Wilton, Connecticut, did a musical, was one of the leads in that. It's community theater, but that was, again, a great experience. And that fall, I had met someone in the play that got me a job like waiting tables in Stamford, Connecticut. I was doing that. And then 2 nights a week, I was getting on a train down into the city and taking an acting class in the city. And by January, I'd saved up enough money that I moved into Manhattan on January 1st of 1995. And, you know, waited tables, bartended, took classes, did everything. And I've, you know, been pursuing it ever since then. You know, I would say I've 100% made a living as an actor since, let's see, I did Sopranos the end of 2001. It came out 2002. I thought I was done bartending. Ended up coming back, you know, tail between my legs. And I was bartending again. So I would say it was probably 2005 really before I fully didn't go back to a day job. So that was, you know, 10 years after having moved to Manhattan.
Gotcha. Okay. I want to know what it was in your trip to Italy that really made you turn 180.
The short answer is a girl.
All right. Okay.
Indirectly, really, you could say. I mean, that was a catalyst. I was going out with a girl from BC. We broke up on the way. I was still traveling with her and her family. It was a very bizarre situation, but the gist of it was, let me close out my mail here because I just got a ding. I don't know if you heard that.
No, I didn't. That's right, though.
Cool. The gist of it was that we broke up, and what that did was it just served as a catalyst to get me to, you know, I was outside of my element. I've told this story before. Just before I went, my sister, I have an older brother and older sister. Mm-hmm. My sister, who's 5 years older, gave me a journal. And she said, you know, just take this. And I was like, okay. And the first couple of journal entries are, if you look back at them, they're really obligatory. You know, today I went to the piazza. It was like just boring stuff. And then this breakup happened and that journal became my lifeline. And I had to write in it. It was like breathing. I mean, I didn't realize it at the time, but now I realize what I was having were panic attacks. I was completely outside of my element, and I started to really reflect on everything and look back at my life at Boston College and realized I kind of had created this persona that I liked and that was doing well. You know, that guy I had created was doing well at BC, but it wasn't fully me. And there was something inside me that just was dying to go like, no, man, this is not it. This is not completely you. And I heard, you know, people talk about Joseph Campbell says, you know, you hear the call. That really was what happened with me. And people say, whoa, it was courageous of you to follow the call. But for me, it didn't seem like an option. It was extreme. It was pretty intense, that trip.
I mean, a journal, of course, is a very private thing. As you were going through that period of self-discovery and heeding that call, was that something you shared with anyone else?
Oh, yeah, man. I had a really, it was an incredible trip because it was everything all wrapped up in one. It was like... so scary at times. I'm a guy who was always a pretty good student, and I was always kind of like a rule follower. And when this thing happened, I knew I had classes I had signed up for, I had paid for, and it was so overwhelming that I just didn't go to the classes. I found this church in this little town where I was, Perugia. I went and I went on the grass and I would write for like 8 or 9 hours a day of just pouring out into this journal. And I didn't care. And I had met some people there. Ironically, I'm not really in touch with them. There was one girl that I had seen afterward in New York, like years later. All these people were so cool, but it was like this intense period of my life where they were just distant enough from me that I opened up to them about what was going on. And I was completely scared and also fully on fire. Like I found my voice. And I became this, it was like, I was like breathing fire. And I came back and I remember telling my family about it. And I remember getting in a fight with my brother. He's 3 years older. And I said, I was like completely fired up. And I was like, I'm not sure what I'm going to be. Maybe I'm going to be a writer. And he, I've told him this since in his typical older brother fashion, was like, what are you going to write about? What do you know about? and usually I would kind of like shirk from him, you know, I'd kind of like cower back. And I just was like, I got a voice, you know, I kind of like got a little nuts on him and felt like I found something. And yet I went back to school. I played fall ball again. I kind of caked it all back on And it wasn't until the end of fall ball. So it was ironic. I had this incredible experience, totally went out on a limb. And then I get back, my brother gives me that, I fight it, I go to school, and I just was like, I went back to the safe option. I went back, played lacrosse that fall, and it was the end of fall ball. We were running around Shea Field where we practiced, and I had this thought of like, man, I just wish I'd roll my ankle. And I thought, this is crazy. What are you doing? And I went into the coach and I just said, hey, I'm done. And he said, think about it. You got a slot on this team. You know, we're done with fall ball. So think about it when the season rolls around. And I said, I've thought about it and thank you, but I'm done. And then spent the next 3 days going, what the fuck did I do?
Right.
It's big to give yourself a gap to actually let go of that identity. All of a sudden you start to go, well, what am I going to fill it with?
Yes, exactly.
That's the fear. And then, but you have to give yourself that gap in order to then go fill it. Because some of us were so busy doing all this stuff, whatever it is that we're doing, that we don't have the time to challenge ourselves to do the thing that would be deeper and require more of us. And so we could go on for days, weeks, months, years like that, not even realizing it.
Did you, that gap that you mentioned, is that something that you played out in your journal in advance? You knew that you needed that uncomfortable space, or did it just sort of happen?
No, I didn't play it out. I thought, when I tell you, I still have that journal somewhere. I've kept all my journals. When I tell you that I was scared shitless, I'm not kidding. I mean, I look back and it was panic attacks. I mean, I thought, I didn't know what was happening. It was like I had another, it was like there was another self within me that had been kind of strangled, tied up, muzzled, and stuffed down. And in that period, he was like, I'm not having this anymore. And he came out and had to wrestle the other dude and come out. It's funny, when I was in Europe on that trip, and I was actually with the girl and her family, and somehow this movie came on, and I was in such a weird head, and this movie came on and I was fascinated by it. And I think it's called How to Get Ahead in Advertising. I've literally never seen it since, but the gist of it was this guy, I was like, oh my God, did they make this for me? Cause it was what I felt like I was going through. This guy had a boil on his neck, and the boil started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden it popped up and it was a head. It was his own head talking back to him. And the gist of it was the same thing. It was like he was lying in advertising. He was, and now someone's probably listening going like, that's not what the movie was about, but that's how I interpreted it. At least I felt like they were talking to me. He had this, you know, honest voice or honest self within him that rose up and was like, I can't keep going on doing this BS advertising job. I've got to speak the truth. And that was kind of what it felt like I was going through. So to answer your question, no, I thought I was going to, I was so scared. What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? But it felt like I needed to. And I didn't anticipate stopping. I think I just came back. And when I was faced with the real test, which was to be that bold around all the people that knew me in the society, in the, you know, the environment that I had set up, you know, whether it was at home that summer, the end of the summer, or it was at BC, all these people that knew me a certain way, it took a little adjustment period to have the courage to then go, hey, I'm not just going to do this in the vacuum of Italy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to stop playing and I'm going to do this. And, you know, you tell people when you're a lacrosse player in college and you tell people you're quitting, and then the next month you tell them you're going out for a play, it's a bit of a different social circle.
So, a little bit.
Yeah. So it was so many lessons in that, man, just on like how people treat you based on the kind of the way you set yourself up, the way you present yourself. People want to put you in the smallest, simplest box they can put you into and then not think about it. Oh, he's a lax player. That's what he does. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, lax player doing a play? And it's like they short circuit and can't handle it, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting you paint it that way, because it sounds like in the story that you were telling, Italy coming back and facing that world and trying to be bold and sort of producing that gap where you have to move forward, it seems like there was this balance of external expectations and internal expectations. Like, imagine there was some point when you started playing lacrosse because you genuinely like lacrosse, and then you had that transformation, and at some point, you know, it was external expectations instead of genuine internal expectations for yourself. So, like, why was it that there was this bottled up Matt Del Negro in there? Like, I'm not sure that everyone can relate to something so strong. Like, I'm sure that everyone is sort of avoiding parts of themselves, but why was it that you were so bottled up?
That's a good question. I think, and it's interesting to hear that, because had you interviewed me freshman year or sophomore year, you wouldn't have, I don't think that you would have been like, oh, this is a guy who's bottled up. But I think that relationship had a lot to do with it. I think I was that girl, you know, in retrospect, was not, she, you know, nice girl, and I have nothing against her. I actually had seen her since then. I haven't seen her in years now, but I don't think we were really right for each other, but I think I was so young that I was so kind of determined to make this thing be something that, like, I think I kind of, I don't know. It was like we were from different worlds in a way, and I was trying to be, I think I was putting stuff on to try to, and not even just with her, maybe with college in general. I had like a, I don't know how to say it. It was like, I loved it. I was never like itching to go to college. And then the first day, I was like the last guy out of all my high school friends to go. We just started later. And the first day I got to BC, I remember going, wow, I am so psyched to be here. It was like, I never looked for it. And then I really came out of my shell in a good way. Like, I was, it wasn't like I was shy and I didn't know anybody in high school, but I somehow in college, I hit my stride, but it's almost like I hit it too well and it got ahead of me, and I became like I wouldn't say I was a caricature of myself, but something like along those lines where I
interesting.
It was going well, but it was almost going too well, too fast, and it wasn't fully me, you know?
Okay. And so you're running with some of those checked boxes that people had started pegging you with over time. Then it sounds like you just
And I find, but here's the thing. I think this continues to go on. If you really pay attention to it, I think this continues to go on for all of us throughout our lives, where even as an actor, you know, what I have found, you know, now I have a podcast, right? That's in the last year. But that was kind of the same, it was a little bit of the same kind of origin story as what I'm telling you about going into acting, because it's like, here I am, here's this guy, he's an actor, he's, quote, going after his dreams, right? But I felt like a lot, I was like, I'm a gun for hire, I'm not fully expressing myself. And I think that itch has been there for the last several years. And finally, the way I scratched it was by creating a podcast where I could fully voice my opinions and talk to the people I wanted to talk to. And so there are always levels. And I think we always have to keep ourselves in check and say, is what I'm doing still firing me up the same way it was when I was inspired to do it? And it doesn't mean oh, you got to quit it and leave it behind. But it does mean you have to either, you know, dive back into it and find the joy, or create something that is going to help you. You know, if it's not fully checking all your boxes, then create something else that will also check the boxes. And then now I have my acting career and my podcast, and they dovetail very nicely.
Right. You know?
But I think it's required of everybody to really stay on top of why am I doing this? Am I still fired up about this? And if I'm not, it's my job to go back and find the flame so that I am fully fired up.
Well, and it's very instructive too, when you say that it doesn't have to be, there's not one single answer that has to exist for everyone. Like for you, it's a podcast and acting, you know, scratching that itch for you in multiple ways. So for people to know that, you know, for example, in this audience at Early to Rise, that, yeah, you can be an entrepreneur and pursue that, but you can also, you know, pursue something else on the side. Like there's a lot of fitness folks who go on to a different realm in entrepreneurship, but they can still do fitness on the side because there was something there that feeds them. So,
yeah, I mean, look at Craig. Look at Craig. I didn't know him before. You know, I met Craig last year. It's kind of crazy that I've only known him for a. Let me see. Where are we? Yeah, I've known him for like a year. I think probably almost exactly a year. And I feel like I've known him for so long. But he, from what everybody says and what he says about himself, he was fitness guy. Now yeah. I met him as a coach and as an entrepreneur, and I had heard him on Jay Faruja's podcast. So I kind of knew his story, but he, you know, he reinvented himself. And now it sounds like he still goes back to the fitness world. He kind of, in a way, left it. And then he realized he still wanted it, but he's doing it in a different way. So it's always evolving, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely constant evolution. There has to be, otherwise, you know, you're just going to stagnate. But actually, that brings up, you know, a question I had when you were telling about your origin story in acting. Not to jump around here, but this really caught me a little bit by surprise, maybe, or maybe it just was a highlight in your story. But you said that after, I think it was after Sopranos, you know, it was kind of a dip for you. And then you kind of went back to as a bartending, your tail between your legs. And I'm wondering what it was that kept you going through that process. Did you go back to your journal to make it through that period and figure out what it was that got you there to begin with, that pushed you back into that realm? How did you get back into it?
How did I get back into
to acting?
Oh, it's not like I got out of it. I'm just saying I wasn't making a living at it. Like, you know, what happened was I've always been acting. It's not that has never stopped. It's a matter of, will they pay me to do it? So you know, what happened with Sopranos was that was a really, you know, I had had, as I always say now, there's no the break. It's a series of breaks. And that was as close to the break as it comes. Yet when I got it, I remember having visions of like, okay, I'm going to do this. Cause when I got it, I knew I had like a chunk of time on the show and I was going to have some stuff to do. And it was just that kind of show that everybody was watching, particularly everybody in my industry. And I had visions of like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to be doing these big movies. I'm going to be on Letterman's couch and
right.
My life. And it did change my life in that I went from being pretty much anonymous to all of a sudden riding the subway and people saying stuff and, you know, being out at bars and people say, you know, it was a show that it was definitely seen. And I came out to LA. I was still in New York at the time. I came out to LA that following year for pilot season, and it was like I had meetings with everybody in town, and everybody I went to was like, oh my God, Cousin Brian, I love you. Oh, you got to come. You know, the video guy in the back will loves you. Let me get your headshot and you could sign it for him. And this is like at NBC. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like, where's my show? Sign me up. So I came out here. It was busy. I felt love, all this stuff, had all these meetings, got close on something, and nothing. Dude, when I tell you nothing, I'm telling you crickets. you know, fired through some wedding money to be out here. I just got married, you know, like went back to New York, tail between my legs, and Sopranos didn't pay me much. That's the thing. It's like, it was incredible exposure. It was incredible work, but they weren't paying much. But it was enough that at the time I thought, okay, I'm making the leap. Here's the leap. Here's the leap. And then it was like, nope, you got to go bartend. And, you know, if you can imagine the blow to the ego.
Of course.
It's a little bit, it's you know, not easy, but I've not really wavered on this is what I'm doing. And it's just, you know, tougher at times than it is at others. And then there have been ups and downs since then. You know, that's a little bit of the name of the game in my industry. There's a little bit of feast or famine. That's also mm-hmm. what I've been doing because I have a family and I'm the you know, breadwinner. A little bit with the podcast and with doing these speaking engagements and kind of, I have also, it's in, like including additional revenue streams to, so that I can not fully have to, even though my acting is my primary, that's my job. It's having these other things, they feed my soul and they also provide a bit of a stability that allows me to be a little more choosy in my acting roles and all of that kind of stuff. So that's what I've set up as well. So it's a soul thing. And it's also, I think, a business thing, you know.
How do you in that space, how do you create career goals for yourself? What does it even look like?
Well, great question. And so here's what I've been going through in my head. You meet a guy like Craig, you know, you take his workshop, you go, you do his retreat, and, you know, these other guys, Jay Faruja, Bejos Koulian, and people talk about, well, goals, what's your goal? You're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to get there. And I sometimes would be like, well, yeah, but mine is really, really random. Sometimes I'm incredible in the room and I don't get the gig. And sometimes I'm not as good and I get the gig. And then like, yeah, get the gig, you're working for a few months. If you don't get the gig, you're not working until you get one. You know, it's hard for people to understand if they're not in it.
Right.
And yet sometimes I think, I mean, I had this thing with my dad the other day. I'm doing this Netflix show right now and I'm having a ball. I'm in a really good head. And he said, you know, is there anything else lined up after it? And I was like, no, not yet. But, you know, auditioning when I'm on the days I'm not working, you know, you see what the next one is. Yeah. He's like, oh, it's so tough for you kids. You know, you got the, you know, it's just such a crazy industry. And I said, Dad, let's not say that anymore. And like, I've just come to, I said, let's not say that. I said, yes, it's difficult, but I chose it. And every industry is difficult. And the beauty of the podcast is that I speak to entrepreneurs and athletes and people that have been diagnosed with cancer and, you know, authors. And I think actors have a tendency, it is a really, I mean, I got to tell you, it's a particularly crazy business. It's the highs and the lows and the randomness that can sometimes go into getting a job or not are sometimes just incredible. If I could, you know, tell you stories, but we won't, it's just too much time. But however, what I've realized is that everybody has the same deal. It's slightly different in every industry, but it's like, there's no good comes from that. And so what I've learned from Craig is like, you know, the whole early to rise. It's like I told you, I think before we even started, or maybe we were rolling already, but I've been getting up at 4 a.m. and yeah. I've been doing, I get up, I make my coffee, I bring the dog out, I do some writing, or I'm literally like looking through the journal from when I had done this Tony Robbins, we had been invited to this UPW thing that he does, Unleash the Power Within. And I have all these notes and I kind of have gone through and like the stuff from Craig, like what are the goals? Like I'll do stuff like that in the morning. And now I'm onto this great thing. Somebody I heard in the podcast was talking about Eric Thomas, and it got me down a rabbit hole of YouTube, like all of these incredibly inspiring YouTube videos and channels that I've subscribed to. And they're just like pumping this incredibly positive, focused message into my head early in the morning. And I just get completely fired up. I get into this head. I'll do some writing and then I'll hit the gym and then be back before the kids are even going to school. And in just doing that for a little bit, you start to realize like, oh, I have more control than I've been aware of. Yes, it's crazy. Yes, it's chaos, but discipline can minimize the chaos, I think.
Yeah.
And that's where Craig is a mastermind, I think, you know.
No, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's part of his signature. That's what he is all about, is that it's in everyone, whatever the industry, whatever your chaos, your particular brand of chaos, that you can create some control there. Two of the things that really stood out to me, I was listening to a couple of interviews that you had done, one on the podcast with Richard Schiff. And that was really interesting. I'm a big West Wing fan. So that was really cool to hear. But he was talking at one point about the difficulty of being present in the acting space. And, you know, you talk about the getting up at 4 a.m. and I imagine that's one way for you to be present. But tangential to that too is a certain amount of authenticity that I would imagine is hard to maintain in the acting space. How do you manage to hold on to both of those things as things are constantly erratic and things are changing and all that?
What do you mean it's hard to hold on to authenticity in the acting space? What do you mean by that?
Well, I was going to sort of roll into something else here, but I would imagine when you get into media coverage, you walk into an interview and I would imagine that you feel, even if it's not spoken, there's certain expectations for how you're going to present yourself to that audience, whatever the audience is. And I would think that it's difficult sometimes to put that aside and say, and revisit yourself and say, no, like you did in your journal all those years ago, and say, this is who I am, Matthew Del Negro. And whatever this podcast is, this show is, whatever it is, I'm going to make sure that I'm authentic to myself. I wonder if it's more difficult for actors than it is for others because they're constantly in the spotlight.
I was almost going to venture to say it's, I don't know. And it's probably different for all of them, but, I was going to say maybe it's easier for us in the sense that like, we know when we, at least we're aware of when we're fully being honest and when we're not, you know, because we're maybe trained in that area. One of the things, you know, just speaking of that, one of the things that the Richard Schiff interview, it's interesting you bring that up. That's kind of funny. We did it and we had some technical difficulties that day. I did it at his house and there was something going on with one of the wires that was going into his mic and it would snap and then it would just like cut out. And it got really stressful for me because I'm like, I love Richard, but he's an intense dude and he's a really smart guy. And I'm like, you know, he's an Emmy award winning actor. And like, I'm appreciative that he's doing the podcast. And I'm like, this thing is killing me. So we had to keep stopping. And then like, I'd be like, oh, it went out. And then like stopping and then ramping back up. And then I was left with this material that I had to kind of go through and almost pre-edit before I sent it to my editor to make sure it was all smooth. So I was dealing with that. And then also he's kind of low speaking. Like he's not a guy. I think it's what makes his acting so great. He is not a people pleaser. And other people speak into the mic and they're, you know, you can hear them. And he's kind of almost like mumbling. And what's cool is that I've gotten great feedback on that episode. So people have really loved it. But he doesn't come to you. He lets you come to him. And he's one of these guys that like, he's a good example of like, he doesn't try to play up for whatever the expectations are of him. Like he could have been like, hey, I'm Richard Schiff and yeah, West Wing, I'm going to answer your questions. And instead he's just like, Yeah, well,
but, yes, but it does. Yeah,
you know what I mean. And that is, I think, what people appreciate about him. If you look at his performances, the dude is an honest soul on camera. You know, he is intense, and he is. There's no BS, man. And it was there in the interview. You know, there's no BS. He's sifting through it. He's not trying to present his life as being perfect. He's not trying to make himself sound like something that he's not. And he just is. And his stories are pretty cool, you know, because he's telling it like it is. I don't know if I answered your question or if I just went completely around it, but.
Well, no, I mean, it's a great example of somebody in that space who's being totally authentic. And not having been in it myself, I was just curious about what that looks like and how difficult that is. And it sounds like it's less difficult than I imagined because of the training that you're given. At least in part because of the training that you're given to maintain space.
You know what it is also? It's like people's idea of the life of an actor, people's idea of what it's like on a set, people's idea of all of this stuff, or what a premiere is. It's just so misconstrued, I think.
I'm sure.
It's just so off from what it really is. It's, you know, there are really good people within my industry. There are also scumbags, but I think that's true in any industry.
Sure.
And you know, there is the idea, and maybe this is just for me, but the idea of like, oh, a red carpet event, you know, a premiere, that's got to be so cool and so glamorous. It's like that kind of couldn't be further from the truth. It's such a bizarrely false atmosphere and weird. It's cool because, you know, you've seen it since you were a kid. Like I did this movie Hot Pursuit and with Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara, and we had the premiere at the Man's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, and they had it, you know, it was all blockaded off and there were all this huge crowd on the other side of the street yelling, and you get picked up and brought in there with the, you know, the black SUV, and you're in a suit that the stylist gave you, and there's a red carpet and all these, you know, it's what you thought of when you were younger. You've seen that on whatever it was, Entertainment Tonight or stuff like that. You know, so it's cool if you just go like, I'm going to treat this like an experience, and it's just going to be like, let's go have fun with this. My wife and I were in the thing, and I said, let's just like embrace it and have fun with it. But really, and it's like a crazy experience. But on the other hand, that's not like the stuff that just really gets you going. I mean, the stuff that gets you going is like the other day, my buddy, Chris Messina, isn't it? Great actor. I don't know if you know him, but he was over here the other day, and we were in my office and we were working on his script. And I've known him for 20 something years since New York. And we were working on this script that he's writing, and I was helping him with it. Like, that to me is what it's about. That, like, working with your friend that you are just so in sync with, and you are working on trying to craft this story, and how do we make it better, and how do we tweak it, and how can it be better and deeper and all of that. That is why you get up in the morning and do this. You know, the premiere, that's all the bullshit that everybody else sees, but that's the other stuff is like the and that sounds cliche, but I'm telling you, hands down, that's the truth, you know?
Well, and the opportunity too, like that you've created for yourself on the 10,000 Nose podcast to have some very real conversations with people who have seen struggle in all different kinds of forms and gotten past it and moved forward in their lives. That too, I imagine.
Oh, that's been awesome, man. That has been such a labor of love. I, you know, I had an interview yesterday morning that just was so inspiring. I can't wait for it to come out. And so unexpected. I had 3 pages of questions for this woman who is a, you know, founder, CEO of a pretty big toy company. And we barely talked about the company. We talked about, she was amazing. And it was like, I'm just sitting there going, you know, how cool is this that I am able to have a conversation like this with a woman like this. And I was just like, this is incredible. I'm just so happy. Yeah. And it's cool. You know, that is something that I'm proud of, is that I just kind of did it, and obviously was helped along the way by a lot of people who encouraged me to do it. But yeah, that stuff is incredible.
How do you find your guests for that show? Like, is there a method to the madness, or is it?
No, you know what? It's been like, that's a good question. Have you listened to a few of them? I know you listen to Richard, but.
Richard, and then I listened to another one too, and I can't remember off the top of my head who it was. The cancer survivor, I can't remember her name.
Paige Davis, maybe?
Paige, that sounds right. It was a recent episode. Awesome. Yeah,
she was awesome. So, it has been an instinctual thing, and it has been an organic thing. So in the beginning, I went to people that I knew that were really high achievers, and I was like, I got to kick it off with something. So I had relationships with, you know, I feel pretty lucky. I have some people in my life that are, you know, pretty impressive, and they were cool enough to sit down with me. So I started with some of them, but even like one of the early episodes, I had just had my first day on the set of Goliath, and I was just in the process of launching the podcast after a lot of kind of back and forth and delaying and everything. And I met this actress, Toni Torres, on set, and she wasn't a star, but she was working and she was going to be there for the whole season. And she said a couple of things throughout the day from her past, like her father being agoraphobic and like being, you know, abusive, and her having she like laid some stuff out, like just in passing, that was pretty intense, and that she was from, you know, like the ghettos outside of Cleveland. And I just said to her, I said, hey, I know I just met you, and this is weird because I don't even really have a podcast yet, but I'm doing this podcast. It's called 10,000 No's, and you just sound like you've got a story. I'd love to hear it. Would you want to sit down? And she was like, couldn't have been happier, and came over, and we had like almost a 2-hour interview, and it was incredible. Now, nobody knows her, so it got listens, but it didn't get as many as some of the other guests, but it's an incredible story. So that one was just like, if I hear a story that is right up the alley of the DNA of the podcast, I'm going to ask someone. Then the others were like high achievers in the beginning. And then inevitably what would happen, all of the guests that sit down, luckily they've enjoyed the experience enough that they're like, you know what? You should talk to my friend so-and-so. And then you're like, oh, awesome. Great. Would you make the intro? And then they're like, yep. And then it goes to that person and that person. Now what's happened, like this woman yesterday, this is where it's incredible. And I actually just did I recorded a solo episode last night because I'm going to be in Paris next week finishing the show. And I wanted to just do a solo. Someone, one of the listeners had suggested that. And I talk about, just go do it and people will come out of the woodwork. So this woman yesterday, who I think was the best interview that I've had to date. It was like lightning in a bottle in some way. And the way that came about was I went and did another person's podcast. Somebody heard it. They have a radio station, like a Christian radio station. And they reached out to me and they said, you know, I heard you on this other podcast and we have this thing. Would you come on and talk about faith? Because you talked about the dark periods in between jobs and how you have faith, you're going to get the next thing. And I said, yeah, absolutely. That's great. And they said, past guests include, and they said a couple people. One of them was this woman that I ended up interviewing yesterday. I said, sure, I'll do it. A few days later, she goes, actually, that woman, she'd be really great for your podcast. She's got an incredible story. I said, sure. And then there you go. And now that woman is sending me another woman, you know? So it's like, and these are like incredible people that I didn't even know existed. I did know this company because it's a huge company. Once she told me, I was like, oh wait, we have toys. My mom has those toys. We have those toys. Like, that's a huge company. And it was really cool. I'm like, how cool is that? That somebody like that is now literally coming to me, I'm so flattered and I feel so lucky, you know, that I get to do this.
Well, and as the podcast grows and becomes more visible, I'm sure that it's that much easier than for people to say, well, you know, I think this person would be a great inclusion as the network grows too around interviewees. I'm wondering in that space a little bit, at least regarding networks, one of the things that's huge for Craig and the ETR world is the idea around support and accountability. And you mentioned you have a family, and I'm sure that that's huge support for you. But how have you used the podcast, use your network in the acting space to build a support group? Like, what does that even look like for you, and how do you go about building that?
Okay, well, I mentioned my buddy Chris Messina. He's a guy that I know. He's been instrumental in my career. We have a group of people. I feel lucky. I've got a group of people that I met in New York that I'm still tight with. And, you know, sometimes the circle has gone, but Chris, this other guy, Blake Robbins, who I met in an acting class, he's an actor, writer, director. Another friend, Billy Tangrady, who I did a play with in New York. He's an actor, writer. You know, Chris has been probably the most steady because we moved out here at the same time. We live pretty close to each other and we both have kids and our kids are roughly the same ages, and that just helps out. And, you know, I tell young actors, cause I get asked to go, speak to these, some acting schools, to the master's program as the people are about to graduate and go out into the real world of it, about like what it's like to be a working actor, all that kind of stuff. And I say, look, two huge things. One, get yourself set up with something that is low overhead, because you're going to need to weather the storms for a few years, most likely. So that's one, you know, set yourself up where you don't have a huge nut to crack every month so that you can do what you need to do to get the experience you need to get. And two, find your people. I mean, support group is huge in my world because, like I said, you get kicked in the teeth for reasons that are not even your fault. You know, you're too tall. You're too whatever you are. And it could literally drive you crazy unless you have a group of people around you that you can kind of go to, and they understand it. And there's times when I'm up and those guys are down and I've got to get them off the ledge. And there's times when I'm down and they're up and they got to talk me off the ledge. And that has been instrumental. And then also they push you. I mean, I would say Chris in particular is always sending me, you know, check out this movie, check out this clip with Pacino talking about such and such, you know, Duvall talking about this or that, whatever. Look at this article. And it's like, I wouldn't be, I tell them all the time, I've told them over and over again, like, I would not be the actor I am. I would not be the artist I am without him in my life pushing me. And that's huge, man. And then also having faith in me when I lose faith in myself, you know, which happens from time to time. So yeah, I think it's huge. And now that what's been cool with Jay Ferrugia, who introduced me to Craig. So Jay and I lived in the same building in Santa Monica for a while.
Okay.
I'm no longer there, but you know, we had seen each other around the grounds of the building and never spoken. And then all of a sudden one day we just started talking in the gym, and I thought, he's really smart and he's really interested in a lot of things that I, you know, just didn't know. He just seemed like he was fully like, you know, a gym guy. And I started talking to him, like, man, he's really a thinker. And we really kind of hit it off, and then we became friendly. And then eventually he told me, I heard an interview he did with Craig. And then eventually he's like, hey, you know, Ballantine is doing this thing. Do you want to do it? And I did. And I remember driving down to wherever it was. It was in like Laguna Beach or somewhere like that. And thinking like, just, oh no, what am I going to do? Am I going to, you know, these people are all going to be such high achievers. I'm not going to be able to handle it. And, you know, it's just like, because they're such hard charges. And what I have found is just this incredible network of new people now who are really inspiring. And because they're not in my world, it's kind of great, because while you need the support group within your own field, there's something really cool about a support group out of your field in a related field. They're entrepreneurs. And I always consider actors entrepreneurs, but it's like to talk to someone like Craig or Jay or Bedros about their business and to see what they've done. It's just, it's so inspiring. All those guys are so passionate about what they do, and they're all really successful, and they're all completely encouraging. I mean, and then like, do you know Sharon?
Oh yeah, I love Sharon.
So I met him at another event through Craig, and he's going to come on the podcast. I just was like blown away by that guy. And he is so kind and enthusiastic to help everybody around him. I'm like, yeah. Who is this guy? I mean, he took a company from 300 million to like 3.5 billion. And he's just like, how can I help you guys? You know? He's amazing. These people are so, so full of life and so encouraging. I feel really lucky to have that around me now. It's totally pulling me up. It's stepping up my game.
Did you get a sense after going to the workshop that it was kind of a light bulb moment where you're like, oh yeah, maybe I could, even though I don't fit into the traditional entrepreneurial mold, I could use some coaching here. Is that kind of what got you started on that? Or was that something in your mind beforehand?
Well, I'm always, you know, I'm always kind of like, I don't need coaching, you know, in the gym, I've always been like, I'm motivated. I've played sports my whole life. I don't need somebody to get me to the gym. I'm going to go on my own and I could push myself. And that is a good quality. It's good to feel that way. But I think through the podcast, begun to realize the limits of doing that and not having a professional around who's got a real, you know, complex strategy or simple strategy, but a very well thought out strategy. I mean, recently Jay helped me. I had to get into really good shape for this role I'm doing, and I had 3 weeks to do it. And Jay just, I was like, dude, I got 3 weeks. What do I do? He's like, and he's just like, it's not even a question. He's just like, okay, can't put weight on. 3 weeks, not enough time. You got to get shredded. It's going to look better on camera. Here's what you do. Bing, bang, boom. It was like, he sent me a program of what I'm doing for the workouts, what I'm going to be eating. And it was amazing. And it worked. I was blown away by what happened. I was like, I'm going to do exactly what you say. And I did. And now I'm kind of, it went so well that I don't really have to be in that shape anymore, but I'm so happy with it that I'm continuing on with, you know, not quite as crazy as what I was doing for those 3 weeks, but pretty much the program as it was, because I'm just like, I like the results. I like the way I feel right now. I like the way it looks. So I'm going to keep doing it. But that's the power of a coach, you know?
Do you, and I don't actually even know, you said you went to Craig's workshop. Do you do one-on-ones with him as well?
I don't do one-on-ones, but he has this thing that, if people are listening, they should know this, because I can't even believe he can do this. I don't know. I don't know how he does it. I'm convinced that he might be a cyborg. he does this thing where I did the workshop and he's like, okay, so it was only like six people in the first workshop I did. And he's like, yeah, okay, so now that you've done this, for the next year, I will be, you know, giving you these accountability emails every week, and I will respond to them. So it's like 10 questions, you come in an email, and then you answer them, and he gets back to you. And he does it every week. And not only does he do it, but when you answer, he has like the most laser beamed response to you. And it comes back so immediately. And then I'm like, wait, you're in like South Africa doing workshops. How did you answer me so specifically? Like what is your deal, man? It's incredible. I'm like, I don't know how he does it. I really don't know how he does that. But yeah, he's great.
The accountability is huge for Craig. I think that's one thing that people are just often surprised by. Not that it exists necessarily, but how effective it is in keeping them on track or putting them back on the path when they veer off course. But now that you've experienced that, are you looking for accountability in other ways? Like what other ways do people keep you on track in acting or the podcast or any other area of your life? How do you make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you a few things that I've gotten from these guys. Three things. One, the script that I'm writing, I actually went to Bedros, who's not in my field,
right?
I'm so impressed by him and so kind of in awe of what he's done. And I, as Craig would say, I don't want to let him down. And he and I have had conversations. We were out, my wife and I were out with Bedros and Diana, his wife, and we just had conversations that I was like, oh, this guy has a real sensibility. And you could see it in his you know, Instagram account and all that. He's a really great storyteller and he pays attention to story points. And so we started talking over dinner and I was like, hey, would you mind just, I want to have you keep me accountable on this script that I'm writing. And so I just said, like, I'm going to get you a draft by this date. And it's kept me accountable. And he's given great notes. And his wife now got on and she's like, I read it and I want to give notes. So now I've got her as well, which is awesome. And then I've got my buddy, Chris. So I have more people keeping me on track with this script because writing is something that I've always wanted to do. And I don't think I've really done all that I could do. So that's been really helpful. The other thing I want to mention is recently I've been in a really laser beamed, the last, I'd say, month or two, I've been fully firing on all cylinders. Like I feel locked in. And I said to Craig, I love the weekly accountability. I said, but right now I feel like I'm in ahead. And I got to be careful about this because I don't want to get cocky and then lose this. But I said, I haven't done the accountabilities, but then I said, look, I'm super busy, but I'm locked in and I feel like I've got it right now. And then at one point I just responded to him and kind of gave him in my words, what was happening and how I had learned from it and what I needed to do. And he's like, awesome. Do what you're doing until you need me again. So it was kind of great. It wasn't like he was like, no, yeah, I didn't get scolded for not answering his weekly questions. He was like, that's awesome. I love to hear this. I'm so pumped up for you. Come back to them when you need them again. You know, when you need to lean on me again. And that's what's just been happening because it's been so around the clock for me that I feel like I've got him ingrained. Like I said, I'm getting up at 4 a.m. I'm doing all the things. And I just kind of like, at some point, I'll go back to answering the questions every week as I was right now for these 2 months I had it. And there was one other thing. I can't remember what it was. Oh, they talk about like he and Jay and Bedros talk about, you know, putting yourself out, public accountability. Now, I am not a dude who naturally took to social media. I mean, it's been like pulling teeth to get to get on there. And now I gave over to Twitter a few years ago, although now I've cooled on that. And now Instagram, I feel like I've finally like had a switch went off in my head where I'm kind of embracing it. But putting stuff out there that has been really good for me. Like I had the first draft of my script. I took a picture of it. I did a post about it. And basically I'm like, okay, I'm talking smack in front of, you know, 25,000 people, 30,000 people. I better write this freaking script, you know, otherwise I'm a liar. And, you know, the thing with getting in shape, I was like, I don't do like shirtless selfies. That's not my thing. But I'm like, I'm going to do that when it comes to the day. If I got to get myself to that point and then I do it. And I did it. And it forced me to be accountable to largely strangers. But it's like, it's a good way to go like, yep, you can't talk smack. You got to do it. So
that's a hugely, hugely humbling. I mean, it keeps your ego in check too, I would imagine, when you're on in that space, when you put yourself out there to a group of 30,000 plus people.
Even the podcast is like that, because if you're going to sit here every Friday, you're going to come out with an episode that's aimed to encourage people and get them to keep going. Well, when you have your down days, you're like, hey, dude, sorry, you're the perseverance guy. you can't afford to just like throw in the towel. Otherwise your whole thing is shot, you know? And that's been cool of like even being on other people's podcasts is like people will ask you questions and it's easy to have a great answer in an interview. You know, what's not easy is to then go follow through, you know, the rest of the 24 hours of the day. And what it does, again, it's like, hey, I just had this really cool conversation where I told all these people, I have faith that I know the next job's coming. It's like, okay, you get off that call and you're like, where's the next job? And you got to be like, hey man, what'd you just tell that whole crowd? You just told them you have faith that the next job's coming. So shut up and, you know.
Oh man. Is that for a lot, in your experience, for a lot of people in the acting realm, is that lacking that kind of accountability?
I think it's easy to hide out. I think it's easy to lie to yourself. I think it's easy to delude yourself, you know? You could tell yourself all kinds of stories and you can convince yourself you're in all kinds of situations better than your own and worse than your own, that, you know, you could be just off in assessing where you are. Yeah. I mean, look, I guess your bank account keeps you accountable, right?
All right.
You could be talking all you want, but if you're not really getting jobs, then that keeps you in check. But I do think that this kind of thing of like surrounding yourself with people that are better than you or beyond you, further than you, whatever you want to call that, is a good thing. And I've always known that from sports. It's like, you know, play with guys that are better than you and you will get better, you know, play with guys that are worse than you and you'll probably develop some bad habits.
Yeah. You'll level up with the right people. Yeah. Totally makes sense. All right. One more question for you. I'd love to keep going, but this one is, I think, a good one to end on. When you talk about the support groups and keeping yourself accountable to these goals that you set for yourself, persevering. How does that fit in with a balanced life? You have a family at home, you've got this crazy erratic career. How do you find balance in that space?
Do you want to ask my wife this question?
We'll do a follow-up interview.
So, yeah, she's like, he's full of crap. No, I think what I do. It's funny. Some of the people I've interviewed have said this, and I've seen it more and more, is go for quality more than quantity. I feel like a lot of times I actually have more quantity because while it is all over the map, you know, I can walk my kids unless I'm working, actually physically filming a show at the particular time. I can walk my kids to school. I usually don't do pickup, but a lot of times I'm doing drop, you know, where my wife and I are walking them together I'm walking them or she's walking them, but I get that time in the morning. And I think it's just kind of making the time to, you know, sit down for dinner together, sit down if they need help with homework or to put them in bed at night, you know, on the weekends, go take them to the beach or whatever it is, you know, their sports. That ends up being, you know, you're going and watching a lot of games. And, so I would say that it's tough sometimes. I found recently my family was on the East Coast and I was here doing this job, and when I wasn't working on the show, I was just grinding on all the podcast stuff and all the other stuff that I have to do, because I was thinking, get this stuff done so that when they come back, you can enjoy them. And I think that's one of the big You know, before we set this up, you had emailed me something and, you know, what are the pitfalls? What are the regrets? I think there's a lot of times where I have cheated my family and my life by not being efficient enough and disciplined enough to get the job done on my time so that I can be with them on the other time. A lot of times I've been with them because I think I do prioritize and have time with my family, but then it's to the detriment of my professional stuff. And the bottom line is, well, you got to be better, quicker, you know, faster, stronger, all that stuff in order to do both. If you want this level of professional success and this level of family success, well, then you better be really good. And sometimes I don't think I'm good enough, you know? So I'm always, that's why it's great to meet guys like Craig who help you get better at, I mean, certainly he's helped me be more efficient. I have light years to go still. I'm not in his, you know, I'm not sending accountability reports to people around the world more like he is. You know, that dude is incredible, but I'm getting better. I'm getting better and I plan on getting even better so I can accomplish more and not only not have it, you know, sacrifice family life, but actually enhance family life by being so good that I free myself up to have even more family time while doing better. You know?
Do you ever worry about burnout?
I don't really. I feel like if there's one superpower I have, I can grind pretty good. I feel like I like to hustle. And as long as I'm hustling towards things I love, I don't worry about burnout. If I start to find myself, like I said, that whole college thing, if you want to take it full circle, if I start to find that I'm grinding on stuff that I don't care about, yeah, then I'll burn out. But if I love it, I can get up. I can go for days and forget that I've, you know, not eaten, because if I'm into it, I love it. It doesn't feel like work. You know, it just feels like I want to just be better at it. So,
well, I mean, it goes back to what you said earlier, which is why it's so important to know your why.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can
grind with the best of them because you just want to do it. You don't think it's sometimes, it still does feel like a grind, but like it's a worthwhile grind. Speaking of which, I'm just looking at the clock.
And yeah, I know. We gotta get going. So,
yeah, my wife's going to be like, what? Are you talking about being with the family?
Well, anyway, thank you so much for taking the time. Like you said, I know you're crazy busy with a lot of different things. If people want to follow up and get a sense of what you're up to these days, posted public accountability stuff on Instagram, whatever, how are they going to find you? What's the best way?
I would say the most active right now is Instagram, and that is my handle there is @MattyDell. It's MattyDell. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, just @MatthewDelNegro. I think the Facebook is like Matthew Del Negro fan page. That's the worst of it for me. So go to Instagram. That's better. And then 10,000 No's is my podcast, and you can subscribe to that on the Apple Podcasts app or Spotify, although I've been told Spotify is not very intuitive, so you have to type in Matthew Del Negro. If you type in 10,000 No's, it doesn't come up. I don't know what the deal is, but type in Matthew Del Negro, it'll pop up. You can subscribe there, or you can also go to the website, which is 10,000nos.com. It's 10000nos. .com. And if anybody has questions or comments about this interview or anything else, you can email info@10000nos.com. That'd be awesome. And I'll get back to you, just maybe not right away because I'm not Craig Valentine.
Right, exactly. You're busy beefing up for the next movie and 100 other things. Matt, thanks again so much for your time. This is going live soon and I'll send you a link once it is, but hopefully we'll have you back on the show sometime soon.
Jeff, you're awesome, man. Great questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt, for taking time away from a crazy filming, writing, parenting schedule to share an inspiring journey with the ETR world. Your humility and vulnerability will give a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, the courage to take the first step toward their own greatness, whatever that looks like for them. I'd love to hear what you think about today's show and how Matt's story inspires your own journey to success through some of the obstacles that you're facing. You can send me an email at support@earlytorise.com. You can also send a message to Craig if you'd prefer to do that. You can reach him on Instagram. He's very active on there. His account, his handle's Real Craig Ballantyne. You can also tweet him on Twitter. His handle there is Craig Ballantyne. Thanks for listening to Early to Rise Radio. Please head over to iTunes and rate today's show, share it with your friends, and don't forget, build your belief system, own your life, and never stop learning. See you next time.